Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the June 4th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Rugby Africa recently canceled its 2020 season because of the coronavirus pandemic. For reaction, Iron Mike Mbonye called Cape Town, South Africa, where he reached the head coach of Nigeria's national men's rugby team, Bronson Weir.
It's a tough one, to be honest with you. Good and bad. Good in terms of that we need to keep people safe and take human lives into consideration. And that the major thing for me is in terms of not playing this year, it will put rugby nations in Africa back so much further. We're already struggling to have matches. Nigeria only played 3 test matches last in 2019. So we're always trying to play catch up to the tier 1 nations. And so for a tier 2 nation, it's very difficult when there's no matches at all. I've been engaging my players while they were during lockdown, sending them videos and so forth, and trying to prepare them for whenever I come back for camps. But it's tough now that there's no matches at all, because the guys will just basically do nothing for the rest of the year then and say, what is the reason? Why must I train? Why must I do this? There will be so many other questions being asked. So it'll be tough to keep guys to do these things for no rugby activities, basically. And so that's basically my take on it now that it's cancelled. But like I said, there's a human part of it, and then there's good to it why it's not being done. And for rugby Nigeria and other African countries to play, there basically has to be no spectators, and it will cost the rugby nations a lot of money to make sure that all the safety hazards are in place, which the tier one nations can afford, and basically not us.
Coach, how many African countries are members of Rugby Africa?
Rugby nations in Africa, everybody belongs. Whoever wants to play rugby, whichever tier it is, when they're starting off for the first time in Africa, there's 50-odd states, so there's 50-odd countries, so all of them belong to Rugby Africa. All of them play at a different level. We know South Africa and Namibia are the only ones from Africa that participated in the Rugby World Cup, and they are basically in the tier one nations, if you can call it that. Namibia just makes it, but everybody belongs to them, even the tier one nations like South Africa. So everybody else also belongs to that, so there's about 50-odd that plays. Even if it's at a lower level, everybody must belong to Rugby Africa.
In your opinion, where does rugby rate in terms of popularity among African fans?
Rugby for Africans are not that big because of the safety hazards and because of the cost to play the game. Everybody just kicks around a soccer ball, but for rugby you need so many other things, like other gear to play. Besides your boots, there will also be like protective gear, like headwear and so forth. And there's also the technical aspects that goes with it in terms of scrummaging and so forth. So I don't think rugby is among the top 5 sports in Africa. To be honest with you, football is way ahead. And I think the other things to follow is like athletics, basketball, wrestling and boxing and those sort of things. But rugby is not one of the top priorities, to be honest. And also that's why it's a problem in terms of funding. A lot of individual players from Africa tend to stand out and make it, but they go play for other countries like South Africa and France. If I just think quickly about Beeson Touera, it comes from Zimbabwe, but has played over 100 test matches for the Springboks and won a World Cup. You think about rugby guys that came from Ivory Coast and so forth, that was also the captain of France. So there's individuals that make it, but they leave. And also to give other African countries an opportunity to play on the world stage. We've seen that with Kenya and Uganda and Zimbabwe to a degree, but we need a second, like a 7 series, a constant thing that happens on a regular basis, not only once off, and that will grow the popularity.
Which way forward for Rugby Africa after COVID-19 pandemic?
Currently, the way forward, I see rugby taking for the tier 2 nations and below. I see it happening next year, not now. So things won't happen now for tier 2 nations, and that's basically it. I first have to see basically what will happen now is games will happen at the club level, and then it will be taken to an international level. So, and then we will probably only play in the West African series for now. We won't see Nigeria traveling easily to countries that are far. It'll basically be in one particular area. That's what I see now. But it's sad, and I actually hope that we get another opportunity to play a top nation again, just to give us a better opportunity to prepare and so forth, and also to grow the game. But for the future, what we'll see now is much more health. We need to have certain things in place before any matches can happen.
That's Bronson Weir, the head coach of Nigeria's national men's rugby team. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Cape Town, South Africa.
Sporting greetings. This is Bronson Weir, the head coach of the Nigerian national men's rugby team. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscast. Every hour, on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
Turning to African football, let's give a Sunny Side of Sports birthday salute to former Ivory Coast and Arsenal defender Emmanuel Abue. Emmanuel was born June 4th, 1983, in Abidjan, the commercial capital of Ivory Coast. He was a fixture at right back for the Elephants of Ivory Coast, making 79 international appearances between 2004 and 2013. Emmanuel also played at two World Cups and five Africa Cup of Nations tournaments for Ivory Coast. At the club level, Abue spent eight seasons at Arsenal before moving to Turkey in 2011. With Galatasaray, Emmanuel won three Turkish Super League titles and five domestic trophies. Now retired from football, Abue opened up on French television in 2019 that he has struggled with his mental health in recent years. In the interview, Abue revealed his problems started when he was banned by FIFA from all football-related activity for a year, the result of failing to pay money owed to a former agent. On his 37th birthday, I hope Emmanuel Abue is feeling better. Happy birthday, Emmanuel. VOA's Jim Stevenson reports several sports leagues have announced returns or are very close to returning as coronavirus contingency plans are made. Jim gave details in his latest Game Room podcast, which you can hear via voanews.com. Let's go to Jim's Game Room.
I'm Jim Stevenson. Welcome to The Game Room.
NHL. We hope that this is a step back towards normalcy.
The North American National Ice Hockey League is ready to skate again, but NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman announced the regular season is over. The league will resume with an expanded Stanley Cup playoff tournament with 24 top teams instead of the usual 16. The only uncertainty is when.
I think realistically, you know, if we're in training camp in mid-July, that would be a good thing. And if we could be playing by the end of July, beginning of August, that would be a good thing too. But if it has to slide more, then it'll slide. There's a reason that we're not giving you dates now, because anybody who gives you a date is guessing.
The postseason games will be played without fans. Bettman says the number one concern is for the players and other team members.
Obviously, everything we're focused on starts with health and safety and people's well-being. But we've been able to work very collaboratively with Players Association and the players to come up with a framework that is fair and has integrity and should result in a terrific competitive
playoffs and ultimately the awarding of the best trophy in all of sports.
NHL Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly says the playoffs likely will not stop should a player test positive for coronavirus.
A single positive test or isolated positive tests throughout, a two-month tournament should not necessarily mean an end to the tournament.
Commissioner Gary Bettman says the coronavirus disruption has had a big impact on the league.
Obviously, in the short term, the impact has been severe. No revenues coming in and expenses still there. And our clubs, I think, have been very judicious and sensible in terms of how they've been dealing with their own organizations. And they've been terrific in the community, whether it's donating money or food or the like.
But he says the NHL was in its best shape in history to withstand the interruption.
Fortunately, our franchises have never been stronger. Our franchises have never been better owned in terms of the strength of our ownership. Although my guess is most owners in all sports are probably not as wealthy as they were 12 weeks ago.
The decision to call off the 189 regular season games that were not played ends the season for teams in Buffalo, New Jersey, Anaheim, Los Angeles, San Jose, Ottawa, and Detroit. After shutting down in March due to the coronavirus pandemic, Major League Baseball and the players continue to negotiate a start to the 2020 season, with salaries one of the key sticking points. Tampa Bay Rays manager Kevin Cash says everyone is anxious to finally get the season underway.
There's a sense of urgency for everybody just to play. This is our livelihood, the players' livelihood, and they want to do everything for the most part that they can to put a product on the field that can be seen most likely through a TV screen or a computer screen for the time being that can entertain our society. And I think, all sports are kind of looking at it that way.
Players, coaches, and stadium workers had their temperatures taken before entering Tropicana Field, and everyone was required to wear masks. But Rays players were allowed to remove their masks while on the field training. Cash saw the start of team workouts as another step forward to getting back onto the field.
I think they were excited just to get back to something that they're normal or used to, given that it was very unusual circumstances, kind of went through a back gate, and certainly we're wearing masks and trying to take every precautionary measure possible, but step in the right direction, and it was good to see some smiling faces.
The Baseball Players Association said management's latest economic proposal was extremely disappointing as they continue to discuss how to get the season going. Australian Rules Football League competition is set to resume in June on the 11th in what will be round two of its season. Last year's grand finalists, the Greater Western Sydney Giants, have resumed contact training for the first time in more than 2 months.
It was a little bit strange. It's been a while, but no, the boys are pretty excited to get out there and I guess just play footy again. No, not really holding back, but it's good to be back out there and we're excited to get back into it.
Giants midfielder Josh Kelly says all of his teammates are being very cautious as they get ready to resume the very physically demanding and rough sport.
We don't want anybody having silly contact injuries or anything like that, so there's a few little parameters we have on that to make sure we're looking after each other and building back in properly, but other than that, everyone's feeling pretty fit.
Still, Kelly says his team is close to being in game-ready shape.
We're not far off. When we can, we have our tackling sessions, grappling sessions, whatever we need to do to, prime ourselves, prime our bodies to make sure once we're there for round two, feeling good and good to go.
The Australian Rules Football League has only released the schedule for the next four rounds of games, hoping Australian government restrictions will ease between now and round five at the start of July. Delayed Formula One racing season revs back up with back-to-back races in Austria from July 5th.
Well, we obviously just announced an 8-race schedule in 6 countries. And we would not have announced it without the support of 6 governments.
The other nations Formula One CEO Chase Carey referred to included England, Hungary, Spain, and Belgium. Carey hopes to soon announce a schedule for the next stage of the season.
Our goal would be before the end of June to try and certainly have a good handle, if not, you know, if not complete the rest of the calendar, at least a good handle on it. Certainly today we know what we'd like to try and do. We have other options if some things don't come together.
Kerry says the races on closed tracks will be held under strict guidelines to keep everyone as safe as possible as coronavirus continues to spread.
It is a, you know, a rigorous set of guidelines. I don't know, probably at this point it's probably 80 to 90 pages that will include everything from how do you travel there, what are the processes for being in hotels there, what are the processes that exist to track for meals, for going to the restroom, for downtime between tracks, the testing processes, so we will test before you go there. I think at this point, testing every 2 days.
And the Formula One CEO says flexibility is key to holding as many races as possible.
You know, we do expect there are races that are on the calendar that probably still will not occur. I think we certainly have option A, option B, option C, option D, and, we got to work through those and figure out, what is the best path for, for everybody, not just us, for us and all our partners.
Sports fans have a lot to hear each day on VOA. Listen to the Sunny Side Sports for the latest from Africa, the United States, and around the world.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro.
Find the Sunny Side of Sports on the radio, online, and as a podcast.
This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
I get it.
And you can get Jim Stevenson's Game Room anytime via voanews.com. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
My name is Joshua Cheptegei of Uganda, a world champion, a Devil Commonwealth Games champion, a world cross-country champion, a three-time world record holder of the 5K, 10K, and 15K. My message to the athletes all over the world and other people is that keep a distance and follow the guidelines given to you by your governments and the health ministries, because the COVID-19 is really a serious disease.
Serious realities indeed, Joshua. That's Joshua Cheptegei, Uganda's world champion runner. Young skateboarder Sky Brown is recovering from a scary fall this week in training for next year's Olympics in Tokyo. VOA's Gwen Uten reports Sky was flown to a hospital in California, and Gwen joins us now with more details. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sunny. 11-year-old skateboard prodigy Sky Brown is on course to become Britain's youngest Olympian at the Tokyo Games. But on Monday, Sky was at a training session practicing the high-flying halfpipe when she overshot the ramp and fell 15 feet headfirst onto her hand. Sky was flown by helicopter to a California hospital, where she arrived unresponsive. She suffered a fractured skull and broken bones in her left hand, and her father told the BBC everyone feared for her life. Well, I am happy to report Sky is now out of the hospital just days after that horrific fall and is recovering well. And her strength and positivity were on full display in a video Sky posted on Instagram and YouTube from her hospital bed, where she reassured her fans she was doing okay.
I don't usually post my falls or talk about them, because I want people to see the fun in what I do. But this was my worst fall. And I just want everyone to know that. It's okay, don't worry, I'm okay. It's okay to fall sometimes. And I'm just gonna get back up and push even harder. I know there's a lot of things going on in the world right now, but I want everyone to know that whatever we do, just gonna do it with love and happiness.
Our thanks to Skye Brown for providing that audio. Skye has certainly been doing what she loves, with her eyes set on making her Olympic debut, along with the sport itself, at next year's Games. Skateboarding so far has traditionally been a male-dominated sport. But last year, Skye told Reuters News, if boys can do it, girls can do it too.
So I think girls can do anything that boys can do, or maybe even better. Yeah, and like, because I feel like sometimes girls are scared to do what boys are doing because they're like, it's a boys' sport. Like, I can do that, but actually can do anything that boys can do.
Skye says she's now ready to show the world what she can do at the Olympic Games, but she first had to convince her parents, who initially thought competing in Tokyo would be too much pressure. But after Skye took home a bronze medal at the World Skateboarding Championships, her parents had a change of heart.
We weren't going to do the Olympics because my parents thought it was too much pressure, but then Team GB, Lucy Allen, she's like the boss of like this like skateboarding association. She said that there's no pressure, just get out there and have fun, and that's the way I skate. Like, I don't really think it's like a training thing. Like, I think it's like more of my happy place. Like, it's like a playground for me.
Skye's passion for the sport literally began on the playground. She started skateboarding in Japan when she was 3 or 4. And even before that, she says the skateboard was her favorite toy. Skateboarding legend and mentor Christian Hosoi has expressed praise for Skye's natural talent on the board. And he told Reuters she has unique qualities off the board as well.
I guess what would set her apart is just her wanting to help people, girls, not only in skateboarding, but off of the skateboard. You know, she's an amazing skateboarder, dancer. She's got a $1 million smile. She speaks well. But I think her philanthropy and what she does, you know, to help girls around the world to believe in themselves, to say, you know what, you can do it. Whatever you want to do, you can do it. I love to hear her messages like that. And for me, that's what I love about Skye, is she wants to change the world.
And Skye is doing what she can to help change the world with skateboard in hand. Besides spending one half of the year in Japan and the other half in the U.S. state of California, she has traveled to Cambodia with Skatistan, a nonprofit that empowers youth, particularly girls, in some of the poorest areas of the world, through skateboarding and education.
Since I was little, I would go to like unprivileged places, and like I just like, as soon as I saw that, I was like, I wanted to do something, because like I'm like I could easily be like there. Like, I just got lucky, so like I'm like, I want to do something. So I decided to design a skateboard, and I also designed it a sock. So basically $10 from each of these skateboards go to the kids in Skatistan.
Besides Cambodia, the organization also runs youth empowerment skate schools in South Africa and Afghanistan. In fact, a short documentary about Skatistan's operation in Afghanistan won an Oscar this year, the highest award in America's film industry. Meanwhile, Skye has expressed hope that a trip to Tokyo will continue to inspire girls who will no doubt be watching.
Hopefully, like, that's why I want to be in the Olympics, to inspire girls and tell, like, hopefully when they see me, this little girl doing this crazy trick, hopefully when they see me, they'll be like, maybe I can do that too.
Skye will turn 13 just 11 days before the start of next year's Games, and if she qualifies, she will break a 92-year record set by swimmer Margaery Hinton, who was 13 years and 43 days old when she competed at the Olympics in 1928. We here at the Sunny Side of Sports will keep an eye on Skye and hope she continues to have a very speedy recovery. And that is all from me. Sunny, back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. We heard Skye Brown say this was the worst fall she's ever had while skateboarding. Yes, skateboarding can be a very dangerous sport. When my youngest son, Alex, was 8 years old, he broke his leg in a skateboarding fall. He's fine now. And let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to Skye Brown as she recovers from her injuries and keeps her Olympic dreams moving forward. And that wraps up the June 4th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat.
African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the internet.